In this talk, I want to look at the art of unconditional receptivity. Spiritual awareness means learning the art of presence and receptivity without prejudice. And I want to unpack a little bit of what I mean by that. One of our strong human tendencies is to be selective about what we appreciate and what we don't. And this is our dualistic mind that constantly divides the field into what we like and what we don't like, preference and non-preference. And this comes from our mind's tendency to know by grasping. Our attention fixates on this or that object, and very soon we develop some kind of identification with it, incorporating it into the world of me in a positive or negative way. Is it beneficial? Or is it harmful to me? Will it enhance my life or will it diminish my life? In this way, we develop a perception of the world that is distorted around our perceived needs. And in the process, we develop a sense of identity in relation to this dualistic perception of the world around us. What we have identified with as our self is a complex picture built up out of our memories, experiences, and interactions with this distorted perception of the world. Some have called this the selfing project, and others have called it the religion of me, saying that this is the most practiced religion in all of the world. The more strongly we identify with the self and its perceived needs, the more strongly prejudiced our awareness is, and the more insistent our preferences will be for certain conditions or outcomes. It does not matter if these are based on good or bad values. The prejudice itself keeps us imprisoned in dualistic thinking. This is because prejudiced awareness forms hard edges of resistance to life and to others. And you can feel this in your body towards people who you disagree with, or you dislike, or you have some kind of history with. But eventually, these hard edges form a kind of prison. Our ability to respond in a flexible and free way has become so conditioned by our resistance and our defense of our perceived identity that we're completely enslaved in the selfing project that we call our life. We go about trying to control life in an attempt to create the conditions conducive for our happiness, success, reputation, or whatever else our selfing project feels it needs. And this can lead to a tremendous amount of suffering. There's an amazing line that a teacher called Muji says, and it really strikes me as profound. As long as your loyalty to identity persists, you will fight against your total freedom. That's how strongly we are stuck in our identities, that it'll keep us from the very freedom that we think we long for. One of the strong temptations in this selfing project is to become something extraordinary. This is what many of us set out on a spiritual journey to do, a kind of self-improvement project. This is a subtle but pernicious form of trying to control life. And it's actually quite a violent way of being with ourselves because we're judging who we actually are as not good enough. Something I learned on one of my 8-day retreats is that I keep hoping that God will transform me into something extraordinary and special. But I realize that in the process, I reject the ordinary isness of this person and her reality. And I overlook the quiet richness that is my life right here, right now. In the same way, I keep looking for God out there, expecting some glorious vision, some blissful experience or some chest-expanding thrill of encounter, instead of opening my eyes to recognize God in the ordinariness of what is real, here, now. Jesus used the wonderful image of the kingdom of God as a treasure buried in a field, and this links for me with the passage we looked at in the introductory talk of Jacob waking up and saying, "Surely the Lord is in this place, and I did not know it. How awesome is this place? This is none other than the house of God, and this is the gate of heaven." The treasure of this holding presence of God is buried in this field. And it's an awareness that begins to dawn on us when we stop looking elsewhere for something more spectacular and allow the ordinary, mundane reality around us to simply be what it is and open to us the treasures that are buried right here, right now, in this moment. As we soften and open to the thisness and raw, unvarnished realness of it all, it gently opens out to reveal this treasure. The sacred is hidden in plain sight, in this, here, now. And so the invitation to us is to develop a flexible, open receptivity to the whole of life, allowing it all in without prejudice. As we learn to do this with what our senses take in, we're able to open to more of life in a receptive, non-dual way. And why this attitude is so important for us to cultivate is that it frees us from the confined dualistic mind with its preferences, prejudices, and judgments. And in the process of softening, we open to a larger wisdom way of knowing. This is also how we begin to recognize God in all things, not just the parts we choose to accept or the places we imagine are sacred or holy. It isn't that anything changes as such, but it's that we begin to perceive from a larger frame of mind, an undivided mind and an open heart. This is what Jesus called being pure in heart, saying that then we will see God. And this changes everything. It's interesting that the Greek word for the word that has become translated as repentance is metanoia, and that literally means larger knowing or larger mind. And so this perception is so important for us to awaken to from this metanoia, this larger way of knowing than our small, divided ways of knowing that we're so used to. And so this opening to everything as it is starts to open us to this larger way of knowing. James Finlay wrote, "God is God who is, and God's world is the world that is. What is extraordinary are the ordinary, concrete realities of daily life. And it is our desire to be extraordinary that in fact makes us less than ordinary whenever such desires move us to pull away from, reject, or even just ignore God manifesting himself to us in the next hot summer's afternoon or the cold wind of a winter evening." Something that I've been learning is that this attitude of open-hearted receptivity means not only receiving the content of the moment, but also receiving our inner response to the moment. So it doesn't mean forcing ourselves to receive everything with good grace. That just becomes another way of pretending or turning against ourselves when we are genuinely struggling with something, like we may be struggling right now with this virus. Instead, what it means is being receptive to our experience of our struggles, of our suffering, of our anxieties and concern, bringing an open-hearted spaciousness to that very experience, rather than judging ourselves for how we react. And we'll look at this in a lot more detail when we look at mindful awareness of our emotions. But in this way, the whole package of who I am can be received with a gentle compassion. Thomas Merton wrote, "I'm coming to the conclusion that my highest ambition is to become what I already am, that I will never fulfill my obligation to surpass myself unless I first accept myself. And if I accept myself fully in the right way, I will already have surpassed myself. For it is the unaccepted self that stands in my way, and it will continue to do so as long as it is not accepted. When it has been accepted, it is my own stepping stone to what is above me, because this is the way man has been made by God. Original sin was the effort to surpass oneself by being like God, that is, unlike oneself. But our godliness begins at home. We must first become like ourselves and stop living beside ourselves." What a beautiful invitation for us to become like ourselves and stop trying to reach out and become something more or other or spectacular or anything other than who we simply are. As we are. With practice, we can learn to accept and live lightly and creatively with our full selves, even the parts that sometimes horrify us. And we do this by choosing to receive our moment-to-moment experience as it unfolds, open-heartedly. As we do this, something inside of us melts, softens, and opens, and we find that we can flow more easily with life, living as a wise participant rather than a desperate victim. We learn to dance with life, with God as our divine dance partner, rather than trying to force it to move in the way that we should, that we think it should. Our ideas are always smaller than the wonder and beauty and adventurous reality of living life in this cosmic dance. Richard Rohr describes that our lives as they are our greatest teachers, if we let it all in, learning the art of listening to the moment with our whole beings. The stuff of your life as it is the raw material for a life of profound richness. All along, this treasure lies hidden in plain sight, in the ordinary stuff of this life, here and now, in this skin, in these emotions, with these limitations. When we open to and receive this ordinary human self as it is, as a gift from God, the profound life-giving mystery of who we are in our essence, our true self grounded in God, is allowed to unfold and flourish from within us. And this is a gradually deepening process that takes place within us as we soften and open more and more to the non-dual mystery of God in it all, hidden in plain sight. So I want to end this talk with two quotes. One is St. John of the Cross, who wrote, "What is grace?" I asked God, and he said, "All that happens." Then he added, when I looked perplexed, "Could not lovers say that every moment in their beloved's arms was grace. Existence is my arms. Though I well understand how one can turn away from me until the heart has wisdom. What an incredible line to hear from God, our beloved. Existence is my arms. Underneath are the everlasting arms. Though I well understand how one can turn away from me until the heart has wisdom. And then a quote from Richard Rohr. How do we find what is supposedly already here? How do we awaken our deepest and most profound selves? By praying and meditating? By more silence, solitude, and sacraments? Yes to all, but the most important way is to live and fully accept our reality. This solution sounds so simple and innocuous that most of us fabricate all kinds of religious trappings to avoid taking up our own inglorious, mundane, and ever-present cross. He goes on to write, our own mind will not be able to figure it out. That's for sure. Our journeys around and through our realities or circumferences lead us to the core reality where we meet both our truest self and our truest God. He goes on, we do not really know what it means to be human unless we know God. And in turn, we do not really know God except through our broken and rejoicing humanity. So underneath this video, I'm going to put a receptivity exercise for you to practice yourself. And again, spend a bit of time doing this, but also just being quiet, returning to presence whenever you can. And throughout the series, I encourage you to use mindful awareness of your senses, of your breath, to return to being present and open to the presence of God.